Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. It takes plenty for a choir to achieve perfect harmony, and that's the aim of a Kentucky church group led by Bradley Whitford on NBC's new Thursday night comedy attached to that aim. Creator and showrunner Leslie Wake Webster joins me next in an internet radio exclusive from Los Angeles. The age of mega programming services begins November 1st with Apple TV Plus. We'll go behind the filming of a highly anticipated Apple attraction, The Morning Show, next half hour with co-director of photography Michael Grady. Also ahead, Fox sets up the Moody's, our new classic trivia question, and Catch 21 this show to know tonight on GSN. Hello everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a trio of audiobooks when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. A good Monday afternoon to you and all. 66 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. And once again, we welcome you to the program All About Television. Two wonderful guests coming your way in the hour ahead, and we invite you to interact with them and us. All you have to do, pick up the phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is there anyway. You'll catch it across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And if you're not into the phone, we got a chat room for you that can raise your voice. It's SimonApple04, my name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. We already have somebody in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk or Speaker screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can be live with you. And Leslie Wake Webster will be live with us from Perfect Harmony in Los Angeles after these news notes. That Moody's Christmas miniseries announced by Fox for this December is now finalized. Now titled The Moody's, Fox will play this over three nights, December 4th, 9th, and 10th, each night having 2 half-hour installments back-to-back. Dennis Leary and Elizabeth Perkins co-star. Now some quickies, HGTV Home and Garden Television will begin a San Diego version of popular multi-series franchise hit properties, or should say hot properties, November 3rd. Nielsen estimates Amazon's The Boys, which was out this summer, averaged 4.1 million views per episode over the first 10 days of its run. Amazon will bring this series back for new episodes next year. And Riverdale creator and executive producer Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa will collaborate with two Riverdale writers on HBO Max pilot The Shelley Society. The drama wannabe has Mary Shelley, that's the author of Frankenstein, out to rid the world of supernatural phenomena. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles in an interview exclusive, the creator, executive producer, and showrunner of the new NBC Thursday night comedy, Perfect Comedy, starring Bradley Whitford, Leslie Wake Webster. Leslie, welcome in. Leslie, hello. Hold on for a second. Let's try her again and see if we now have her. Leslie, are you there? Leslie Wake Webster from Perfect Harmony, are you there? All right, for some reason, we're not getting her. So what we're going to do is we're going to quickly reboot. So we're going to go off the air for a couple moments. We're going to call back into the show. Leslie, wherever you are, stay on the line, and if you can hear me. And we will be right back to all of you in just a few minutes. So hold on. We will be right back. All right, we're back with Marvin Televised, and hopefully now on the line with us from Los Angeles, the creator and showrunner of the new NBC comedy, Perfect Harmony, Leslie Wake Webster. Leslie, are you there?
Hi, Simon. I am here. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. So you're about a month into the run. How is it going? What kind of harmony are you and your folks creating?
We hope we're creating pretty good musical harmony. We have been playing around with doing different styles of music and different types of songs for our choir to sing. And anecdotally, I'm getting positive feedback, but then again, it might just be my parents and their friends who like the show.
Well, that's a start. You got to have a good foundation somewhere. How did you get the idea for doing the show?
That's quite true.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get the idea for doing Perfect Harmony?
Oh, well, I grew up in Kentucky and singing in church choirs, and my grandfather is the bassist for the character that Bradley Whitford plays. And my grandfather went to Westminster Choir College, which is kind of a hoity-toity music school, and he was a real choral music snob. And my whole life, I grew up with him, you know, telling me what was good music and what was not good music. And he, as a kid, I really loved the movie Mary Poppins. And he took me aside and told me that I should not ever aspire to sing like Julie Andrews because he didn't like her voice. He thought her voice sounded like a girl's voice, not a woman's voice. And he said a woman should sing like a woman. So he had very, very snobby taste in music. And as I was thinking about what kind of show I wanted to do, I wanted to do something that sort of honored his journey as someone who was a classical musician, but who also lived in rural Kentucky. And at the end of his life, he was pretty depressed. My grandmother had died. He'd been through some hard times. And the only thing that brought him any joy was conducting music. And he conducted a community choir. And it was the one time I would really see him kind of come back to life into a very joyful place. So this show is sort of a homage to him and the journey he went on.
So what kind of journey, Leslie, were you on to get this program from creation to NBC?
Oh, my gosh. It was about a year-long journey. Last summer, I sat down with Jason Weiner, who is my fellow executive producer and who directed the pilot. And Jason and I have worked together in the development process before. And we were talking about what project we want to go out and pitch. And I knew that I wanted to do something that had to do with growing up in Kentucky and something that had to do with my personal journey through, faith and music as a child. And as I was circling this idea of my grandfather possibly being this character, Jason said, well, I heard Bradley Whitford is looking to do a half-hour comedy. And we met with Brad, and we were so excited. It was a real meeting of the minds. Brad grew up Quaker, and so he was very interested in doing a show that took a respectful look at what it means to have faith and share your faith with other people. And so we got a pitch together, and I tell you what, when you walk in a room with Bradley Whitford at your pitch, everyone laughs and tells you what a great pitch it is, even if it's just because they want to impress Bradley Whitford. And we ended up selling it at NBC, and we're so excited because they seem to be the network home of shows that are about workplace as family. And in a weird way, this choir is a workplace. We've got all these different people who aren't related to each other who show up at choir practice, and that's where their lives intersect. And then they are sort of a dysfunctional, informal family for each other. And that very much fits in the model of Superstore or The Good Place, where we see a group of people who become each other's family.
As a matter of fact, Superstore precedes you on Thursday nights. So I'm curious if you were able to take some things about how they did their show and bring them, you and Jason. And for those who don't know, Jason is one of the top contemporary TV comedy directors, having done a little thing called Modern Family, among other things. great success.
That's right. I did watch some episodes of Superstore, which I think is such a funny, well-done show. And I feel like one of the things it does is it really tries to represent a diversity of viewpoints, and it really is respectful in its treatment of, people whose lives are maybe not as fancy as some of what we see portrayed on TV. And being from Kentucky, that was an important thing for me. I grew up middle class in Kentucky, which I thought was pretty fancy until I actually got to Princeton, where I went to college, and I discovered that compared to the rest of my classmates, I was considered really unsophisticated. And I had a few stinging, painful moments where I discovered I didn't talk as fancy as I thought I did, and my experiences weren't as fancy as I thought they were. But I really wanted to make sure that people who grew up like me have their experiences portrayed equally. And I feel like NBC does such a great job of celebrating, truly celebrating diversity and showing that there are different, you know, people living different types of lives out there in the world.
Perfect Harmony is back-to-back with Superstore on Thursday night. Superstore at 8, Perfect Harmony, the new series starring Bradley Whitford at 8:30 on your local NBC station. That's Eastern and Pacific Time. And we've got the creator and showrunner with us, Leslie Wake Webster. She's live with us from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Simon Appleton with you live from the other coast of New York. It's 66 sunny degrees here in the Big Apple at this hour. And we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, your words or music, and a phone call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our next episode is this Friday at this very hour, and among our guests, we will have the executive producer and the co-creator of one of the most popular children's shows of all time, from Nickelodeon, Blue's Clues. Why are we having her on? Her name is Tracy Page Johnson. Well, because in November, Blue's Clues is coming back in an all-new version called Blue's Clues and You. And if you have Vudu, which is the Walmart video on demand service available on smart TV sets and smart devices, you don't have to wait until November and Nickelodeon catch it. You can see some select episodes, new episodes, right there and then. But we'll have Tracy Page Johnson, the co-creator of Blue's Clues and this new series, with us live. That's this Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Leslie, how did Bradley take the person you knew and the character you created and shape the character as time went along putting the episodes together?
Oh, well, first of all, I think the most amazing thing that Bradley does is he takes any character that he plays, but he certainly took this character of Arthur Cochran, and he brought such depth and vulnerability to the character. Arthur says some really rude, judgmental things, but in Bradley embodying him, you simultaneously see the sophistication and the cruelty of this sort of East Coast elitist, but you also see that it's coming from a place of enormous pain. And one of the great surprises to me was in the first 2 minutes of the pilot, when we got to watch people react to it as they watched it, I was really concerned. The pilot opens with Bradley's character contemplating suicide. And I thought, this is a hard way to start a pilot. Not a lot of people might like to watch this. But watching Bradley Whitford do it, you're so immediately drawn in, and you're concerned for him, and you're wondering, what is he going to do? And he just grabs you and takes you on that journey. You're along for the ride immediately with a character who's really unlikable doing something that some people consider unforgivable. You know, so it's really... He brings a humanity to it, and then he is such a skilled comedian. You know, I feel like people mostly know him for his dramatic work, but he has the physicality of almost of a trained clown. The man has incredible flexibility. We just did a Halloween episode in a couple weeks, and Brad does a whole sort of Chippendales / Magic Mike dance routine where he does the splits on top of a bar. There's nothing he won't do for comedy or to sell the truth of a moment. So it's everything you would want in an actor.
Mm-hmm. How much of making a unlikable person likable to the viewer rests on him, rests on you, and rests on how Jason and his fellow directors handle the individual plots?
Oh, gosh. I think it's a pretty even split. I should say, you know what, maybe that's a lie. I'm going to say 50% rests on Bradley. Bradley's inherent likability and I would just say humanizing of the character allows you to feel like you're really watching a flawed human who's struggling with what it is to move on with his life. And I think that's crucial to liking and understanding the character. And then I do feel like it's very important for me with the words I'm using and the stories we're telling to represent, to show that the Arthur character has some growing to do. I think this show wouldn't work and the character wouldn't work if we were presenting Arthur as someone who has all the answers and is showing up in a small town and telling them what they're doing wrong. The truth is, Arthur's showing up in a small town thinking he knows what's right and discovering that he has a lot to learn from these people in a small town who he's looked down on. So I feel like that's a very important part, that the writing shows that he has growth to do. And then Jason Weiner is such a fantastic director, and I feel like he is, the great gift he brings besides being a comedic director is that he really tries to convey reality. So he tries to, in the way he shoots it and the performances he asks for from the actors, to make us feel like we're dealing with real human beings who are living complex lives, not just cookie cutter caricatures of things we've seen on TV before. But yeah, it does rest on Bradley. If you didn't love him so much, I don't think this character would be palatable to watch.
Yeah, let's give him the bulk of the responsibility to cause the manner of the character. Alfred Lamed, by the way, just joined our chat room, so welcome in. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or make the call, 646-652-2906. What was very important for you, Leslie, given your background, to portray not just the choir, but the whole idea of small-town life in Kentucky?
Well, I really wanted to show that there's complexity and depth. I think often small town life and small town life in Kentucky in particular gets put into this very stereotypical portrayal of, poverty or crime. And it's true that that exists in all parts of the country, but I grew up in Lexington, which is actually kind of a big city in Kentucky. But my mom is from a small, small town in Kentucky called Monticello. The rest of the country would pronounce it Monticello, but in Kentucky we say Monticello. And that's a town of about 5,000 people. And she and my dad built a cabin on some land that my mom had inherited. And we spent every weekend in a cabin that had no TV, no telephone, and we were just told to like go out and play in the woods. And that experience of being in a small town, being connected to nature, finding ways to connect with the people around me that weren't about technology, and it really gave me an appreciation for a type of world and life where your community is truly those people around you, those small town people who you know, and they might have very different points of view from you on politics, but you see them on Sunday at church, or you sing with them in the choir. And I think sometimes in the polarization of the modern media landscape, we forget that, we often live side by side with people of very different points of view, and that doesn't mean we can't be good neighbors to them. So it was important for me to show the sense of community that I felt in singing in churches and being in a small community where, yeah, people might believe very different things, but they were still decent to each other.
Mm-hmm. This past Friday, Leslie, we had Neil Marone, the executive producer of the new Lifetime film, Patsy and Loretta, about the relationship between Patsy Cline and Loretta Lynn. But many people also know Neil with his late partner, Craig Sedan, for all the NBC Live Broadway musical specials over the last 5 or 6 years, starting with The Sound of Music Live, and then last year, the Emmy-winning Jesus Christ Superstar Live. And he felt it was very important that he had people who were involved with Patsy and Loretta's lives together. In fact, the daughters of both Patsy Cline and Loretta Lynn were co-producers on the film. It was on Lifetime this past Saturday night. In terms of the musical aspect of the series, how did you try to make it as realistic as possible, and do you have a musical director? Do you have a choir director? What do you do in terms of the choir side of things?
Oh, gosh, we have an amazing group of people who contribute to the music. It started with Jason and I met in the fall of last year with Adam Anders, who is an executive producer now on the show and is our music producer. And Adam is probably best known for being the guy who wrote all 800 mashups on Glee. And, it was obviously very exciting to talk to Adam because I knew he had this incredible musical skill. But what we really connected over was the fact that Adam grew up in singing and playing, I want to say the upright bass, but I could be wrong about that. But singing and playing in a mega church. And his mom was a choral director as well. And so he was coming from this place of really wanting to honor and celebrate the great church music. And as he has said, he said the best singers in the world are church singers. You know, there's very few people who get the privilege of making a living as a professional singer, but a lot of people with amazing vocal ability are in our churches, and that's where they get to express their, musical skills. So Adam is the person who does all our arrangements. He and I together, I have asked him before, I said, can we mash up this song and that song? And he'll laugh and he'll say, those two songs should never go together. And yes, we can absolutely do that. That's how we ended up with mashing up the Hallelujah Chorus and Eye of the Tiger in the pilot. And from the church side of it, both Adam and I have a pretty deep history of songs that we've sung, hymns that we remember from church. And so that part is pretty easy to draw on to try to find the meaningful church song that we want to use. And then in terms of the pop or the modern music that we are mashing up with sometimes, that's where I really lean on Adam for guidance about, about what musically, what will go well with a church song.
How have people responded to the mashups? And for you, what makes, and for Adam, what makes a successful mashup, able to infuse, if you will, two different musical styles? I mean, I'm not trying to picture how you do Hallelujah with It's the Eye of the Tiger, it's the thrill of the fight.
One of the things that Adam did for that Hallelujah, Eye of the Tiger mashup was he took the part of Eye of the Tiger that goes dun, 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 and he had the choir sing Hallelujah to that. So they go, ha, hallelujah. And it's this wonderful, like, oh, my God, I've never thought of doing that moment. And I feel like a well-done mashup creates a feeling of sort of celebration of taking two things that you never thought could go together and experiencing them in a different way. Like the Hallelujah Chorus, famously, I was always told this by my grandfather, when it was originally performed, the king at the time, I think it was King George, was so impressed that he stood up and everyone had to stand because the king stands. And so there's a tradition that when the Hallelujah Chorus starts, the audience is supposed to stand. And I feel like that is the equivalent of getting on your feet and rocking out from 300 years ago, you know, and which is what Eye of the Tiger makes you want to do. You want to stand up and scream and, you know, throw your fist in the air. And so to be able to sort of capture that and bring Hallelujah Chorus into a more modern feeling, I've mostly gotten really positive feedback about it. I suspect that my grandfather would think it was really terrible and we shouldn't have done it, but you can't please everybody.
Yeah, and by the way, if any members of Survivor are listening to this program and they're getting a little angry about how I just did their song, I apologize. I love your song anyway. We're speaking with Leslie Wakemaster, the creator and showrunner of Perfect Harmony, new NBC comedy series with Bradley Whitford and crew. You can find it on your local NBC station Thursday nights at 8:30 p.m. East Pacific Time. Leslie joins us live from L.A. this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm Applebaum live from New York. And if you have a question or comment or a little punchline, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And if you missed our episode on Friday with Neil Marone of Patsy and Loretta and all those NBC live Broadway musical specials, and Crystal Hunt, the star, creator, and executive producer of the new Perfect series, Loot Swing, that premieres also this week. Well, check us out on podcast at iTunes, Apple TV, the Speaker Podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. You go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click, and you are in. Where do you want, generally, the show to go in the upcoming weeks?
I feel like the pilot really centered around this, you know, pivotal moment in Arthur's life. And it's super compelling because that's Bradley Whitford and Arthur is a great character. But in the upcoming weeks, I hope that people will see that this is truly an ensemble show and that there's as much to watch and enjoy about the character of Jenny, who's played by Anna Camp, who is probably best known to people from the Pitch Perfect movies. Anna is such a great comedic actress and she has a beautiful voice, and we start exploring what's going on with her character, and her character is a single mom and a waitress who is sort of trying to figure out how she can get a little more of what she wants in her life. And I feel like that's a journey I turn on TV to watch also. We have her ex-husband who is loosely modeled on a friend of mine who loves to hunt and trade and sell snakes. And I feel like that's kind of a fun thing to tune in for also. We're watching as these two, as a, an, a couple try to figure out if they should be together or not. And there's a little bit of a love triangle with the ex-husband's best friend, who is played by Gino Seegers. And Gino, if you've had the chance to catch the pilot, has such a deep, amazing voice. The joke we make in the pilot is that he sounds like if Darth Vader swallowed Mufasa. It's just an incredible, deep bass voice. And hearing him sing is one of the most fun things in the pilot. And that's a character who's starting from a place of being very timid, even though he's a huge man with a huge voice, and kind of discovering himself. And so I feel like watching all these other characters go on their journeys and kind of come into their own a little bit should be part of the fun. We've got our choir is going Halloween caroling in our Halloween episode, where they're going door to door to try to get people to come to church and singing Christmas carols, but with Halloween themed lyrics. And in our Christmas episode that's coming up, the Reverend Jack's character, who's played by Rizwan Manji, that character is originally from India, and we have an amazing Bollywood-themed song and dance number that happens in that. So I feel like there's a lot of fun, holiday fun coming up, but also a chance to get to know some of the other characters who aren't Arthur just as well.
And final question, Leslie, given that you are not just a show creator, but you are running the show with Jason Crew, what kind of emphasis have you placed on diversity? Diversity in terms of cast and crew, diversity in the writing staff, and also diversity in, it's obvious that you have diversity in the music all over the place.
Yes. Well, I really believe that the more diversity you have, the stronger a creative product is. I think our creative process is improved when you hear from a diversity of viewpoints. In our writer's room, we tried to have diversity of gender and race and different backgrounds, different, you know, social classes. I think we ended up doing pretty well. We are half men, half women. Four of our writers are people of color. We have a couple writers who identify as, I think they would say queer is the word they would use. So I feel like there's a good diversity in that regard. We also have some active churchgoers and some avowed atheists, because I felt it was really important that we were in a show that's about, you know, two very different points of view about faith, that we really had that represented fairly on both sides. In our directing, we have tried to hire a diversity of race and gender in our directors, and then one of the most exciting things has been that NBC was really gung-ho for us to cast whoever we thought were the best people for these roles, and so we have a very diverse cast, and it's I very much wanted them, when they sit down at a table read to read the script, to look at the writers and the people and the crew and the people involved on the show and see themselves reflected, which was one of the reasons it was very important to me to have a lot of diversity on my writing staff.
You can see the harmony of Perfect Harmony this Thursday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on NBC, right after Superstore. Like Leslie was saying, a very interesting back-to-back look at different workplaces and how they go. Perfect Harmony stars Bradley Whitford, and again, it's on NBC Thursday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after Superstore. Check your local links for the NBC station near you that carries the program, and for more details about the show online, of course, www.nbc.com. Leslie Whitford, the creator and showrunner of the program, thank you very much for a wonderful time this half hour. Congratulations on getting your show off the ground, hopefully with you and Jason and crew, the beginning of a wonderful and long run, and it has been a total pleasure to have you here. We'd love to have you back.
Thanks so much, Simon. It was my pleasure.
My pleasure too, Leslie. Take care. All the greatest. Leslie Whitford, the creator and showrunner of Perfect Harmony, joining us live from Los Angeles. Get ready for our pocket trivia question of the week. We've got a new one for you, and we'll have it for you after these words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Are you looking to get rid of some self-doubts or self-incursions into your life that hamper you? Well, how about trying this audiobook, Trip Mirror by Gia Tortino, and you can get it right now as one of your three free audiobooks at Audible.com. Audible.com is the place to get the best audio around. There's over 100,000 titles to choose from. It is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and yes, absolutely inspiration. And remember, you can listen to any of those titles on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. Remember, just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised, and you get not one, not two, but three audiobooks at one my trial. And two of those audiobooks are from the growing catalog of Audible Originals, everything from original audio work to the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater around the U.S. today, and One Woman, One Man shows. So once again, if you're looking for an audio experience that will transform the way you hear the world, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up our next half hour, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week. We'll also have a show to know that's on tonight on GSN, premiered last week. It's back for week number two, the all-new Catch 21. But first, we'll talk to one of the people who put together The Morning Show, one of the first shows on Apple TV Plus, premiering a week from Friday. Michael Grady from The Morning Show joins us live from L.A. after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio and www.speaker.com. Together, more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Paranormal Wednesday. Check out the spooky goings-on this Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Paranormal Wednesday, right here this Wednesday on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Don't forget, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon of October 2019. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted to have you aboard. 66 degrees at the top of the hour. Another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead, along with our classic trivia question of the week. And a show to know about a new game show that premiered last Monday and is on this Monday again on GSN, the all-new Catch 21. And if you have a question or comment for our upcoming guest, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. A week from this Friday, what you may call the new era of mega programming services will happen. If you think of a plentiful era of scripted television now, wait till you see what happens over the next 12 months. With first, on November 1st, the launch of Apple TV Plus, then on November 12th, the launch of Disney Plus, then in the spring of next year, the launch of both HBO Max and Peacock from NBC Universal, and in between, a whole bunch of other new services, many of which will have original scripted fare. Well, with Apple TV Plus, one of the most anticipated shows on that service is The Morning Show. It's the satire of morning television with an all-star cast led by Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, and Steve Carell. Joining us live from Los Angeles is the co-director of photography on that series. He's with us right now, Michael Grady. Hello, Michael.
Hello, how are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. And we're making a little history because you are our first interview involving Apple TV Plus, which a lot of people are trying to get, and you've been successful at. So we're delighted that you're aboard with us.
Well, I'm very delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And you know, it's definitely a high profile show. I guess people want to talk to these three actors. I'm not sure why. I guess they're relatively well known, I think so.
Well, they make the show, but so do you and everybody else involved in the crew. And how did you get the assignment, Michael, to be one of the two people filming the show?
I go way back with Mimi Leader. We've worked together for 15, maybe 20 years. I mean, we go far back, from pilots, TV shows, movies. And so through her is how was the connection. She's the lead director and one of the executive producers. And we were finishing last year on The Basis of Sex about Justice Ginsburg. When it first sort of kind of started percolating, and she's speaking to me about it and hoping that we could keep working together. And to be honest with you, I'm such a fan of Mimi's that any kind of anything she's doing, I'm probably interested in. And a show like this, it goes without question. It's just it was a great opportunity. And it's always an honor to be able to shoot, you know, such gifted actors like this. You don't always get just an astonishing lineup of movie stars, especially on a really unique and a timely story to be told. So although it's about The Morning Show, it's certainly about a lot more than that. But so we are our past and our the fact that we worked together for many years was a little luck that brought me to this next opportunity with her.
I've noted Mimi's work for a long time, her work on ER during the 1990s on NBC, her work on films like The Peacemaker with George Clooney and Nicole Kidman, I believe, and other things. She's always been a terrific director. And I did not know that she was on. She was one of the key people making the morning show happen. So that's a nice partnership to have. What advice or what guidance did Mimi give you about how to film the show or what to emphasize?
Well, I mean, we like I said, we've worked together many times before, and she's just an awesome director in the sense that she'll have a real unique vision and a clear vision, but you know, many of them have that. It's just the ability to communicate it in that way, that each of us, you know, production designer, maybe costume designer, whoever that may be, actor that can bring something, you know, to the table and hopefully bring some of their background and creative experiences. And maybe something that, you know, a little something that she might not have thought of, but she does such a great job of opening that door, but yet still really keeping everybody, you know, and constantly making sure we know exactly what story we're telling. We have a great collaboration. I mean, we did The Leftovers together before this, really recently. So we had even a real immediate, you know, experience of doing television and 1 hour episodic dramas are frankly one of the hardest things to do just because of its duration to try to tell a longer story. I think even than a 2 hour movie, like a 10 hour movie like this is sometimes even more difficult, in terms of just staying on top of it and keeping it constantly, you know, engaging enough that someone wants to put that much effort towards it. And I mean, I think this is one of those kind of shows, not as much of an effort show as The Leftovers, but it is a show that I think will demand a little of your attention to grasp it all, I guess. But she's awesome. She has a great sense of being able to point you in the right way. And this one, you know, it was, you know, the glamour and the glossiness and this obvious sort of world of being on a high profile TV show that like we're doing in terms of a Today Show, Good Morning Show, or Good Morning America, that type of thing, and contrast that with the sort of dramatic and quite grueling world that they live outside of that slick and sort of perfected world on television. So we played with that a lot, and also the difficulties of these incredibly sleep deprived nuts world that these morning show people live in. So,
given that this was one of the first shows announced for Apple TV Plus, and it's going to be one of the first shows that will be on Apple TV Plus a week from Friday, what has it been like to be on that set and to recreate or to create the world of morning television in such a way that engages the viewer off the bat?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, it's, well, how do you present like a realistic world of what that stuff looks like? And we all know, we all have a, you know, understanding, a semiotic of like, oh, that's the language of morning news programming, that sort of thing. And then but to make that more interesting and try to strip those layers off and see what's behind it, what are the humans that are behind it. I think that, you know, approaching those contrasts, and it's the most important thing for me, like how difficult and, you know, challenging it is to have your whole life sort of on screen in front of people. I mean, it's one thing the movie stars, but another thing, I think this on-air personality, the sense of that you're a real person or a personality that people seem to have a connection to, like as if they were a friend. So there's this daily grind of it. I mean, in terms of this, the Apple and the, it was a big show. I mean, it was a really cool experience in terms of everybody knowing it was new and everybody knowing that this was like their thing to start it off. But it also just felt like a really good sized movie because we had such a talented crew and such a talented cast and writing that it always felt like something significant. And it really was. I mean, just not like, you know, all these Hulu and Amazon, everybody, Netflix is really changing the game of what, you know, a TV show is. I mean, this, you know, HBO took off and the model of everyone making these really extravagant and high production value television shows that are, well, cut. I mean, they're better than half the movies these days. I mean, you know, it's some of the best writing, some of the best material. So we were all quite aware of like both what an awesome opportunity because of the Apple's launch on top of the fact of what an amazingly timely story that hopefully, you know, we as a society, I mean, it's a very self-reflective, self-examining thing almost to the industry, to the idea of media and what it means to present this false personality on air. And, you know, hopefully it's a zeitgeist moment. You know, this timeliness of Ronan Farrow's book and everything else that really is what our show is about. I mean, that is what it's about, beyond beyond morning television, certainly the hashtag MeToo movement is really what we're examining. So extremely fascinating, extremely creative, and also honorable, I guess, in a way. Like you felt like, well, yes, we're doing entertainment, but it was really timely, and it felt like, well, maybe we can help to make a little bit of a positive statement in some ugly, ugly history that went on. So it helps the job. You know, if you make something, a piece of art, you know, it feels significant. It certainly it weighs it on you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We are speaking with Michael Brady. He is one of the co-directors of photography on the new series, The Morning Show, with an all-star cast led by Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, and Steve Carell from the first original series of Apple TV+, which, unlike Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and other services you can get on your smart TV set or smart device, it will begin with all original programming. This is one of the ones that they are talking about. And it premieres on November 1st on your smart TV set or smart TV devices, of course, including Apple TV. Michael Brady joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Time and I'm here with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for Michael, make the call. We want to hear you at 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests we'll have Tracy Paige Johnson. She was the co-creator and executive producer of Blue's Clues, one of the top children's shows of all time on Nickelodeon. And next month it returns in all new episodes as Blue's Clues and You. And you can get a sneak preview of those episodes on Vudu, the Walmart video on demand service available also on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Tracy Paige Johnson from Blue's Clues and Blue's Clues and You. An exclusive interview this Friday, 3:30 Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. I was watching Mr. Robot last night, Michael, and I'm a big fan of Todd Campbell's work on that show. I hope he gets an Emmy nomination for the final season because it's extraordinary work he's doing. And one of the things that I'm noticing that he and other cinematographers are doing for television is they're spending a lot of time not just framing the actors, but framing the surroundings so that you have to pay attention to both. When you have an environment like morning television, which can be very frenetic, very kinetic to capture, either on videotape or film, how do you go about doing it? And how do you go about doing it consistently?
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree with the strong work that's going on. And, well, I mean, certainly, like, this world of both those actors, like you said, but, like, framing what environment, what world that they live in is a part of this. And then, I mean, I think as a cinematographer, it's like, yeah, you need to sell the true nature of whatever environment that the story takes place, but then I think there's a part of us that says, like, well, let's frame it in a sense of art, or let's frame it in a sense of framing to be a painting if it was hung on the wall. So then, you know, perspective, composition, things like that, depth, things of the illusion of 3D and a 2D space, like all these things we're trying to constantly do just to really, in essence, draw the viewer into it. So depth and dimensionality to a flat TV screen or a flat movie screen. And that's really all we're mostly constantly trying to do. And within that, is it every shot that happens and every time there's a cut that I'm trying to tell you where to look, look at that person they're about to speak, or look at that person they're going to react to what that was said. So in how you frame that, whether at that moment, is it important that it's a big event, that something, you know, say, example, if everything blew up, so a big wide shot that would show that, or someone's small reaction to fear on their face of the after effect of that blow up. So each shot as we go along is like, hopefully, and I'm big about, is like every time asking yourself and the director and to have this conversation is like, what story does this shot tell? Every shot. What story is told here? What story does this one tell? So, and that sounds really simple, and it kind of is, but then it gives you a real discipline of, like, what is the purpose of each shot as you are selecting them to create your semiotic or your language of how you're going to tell that specific story. the environment of, like, a TV show, it's, like, it's weird because they have such a, like, every time we visited, you know, Good Morning America today, and they're quite claustrophobic. Their stages were never as big as I always assumed when I'm watching on TV. And so we played with that a bit, and it was sort of this weird, surprising nature of, I guess it's like the grandiose Hollywood stuff. It's like, well, our stages are so much bigger. But the environments are tough because it's really, it's all New York. It's all in the, you know, like Rockefeller Plaza or whatever, where so you have where the stuff's up behind, it's on the 30th floor or something where they are. So it's still that same sort of like low ceilings and that sort of thing, even in their stages because of all the massive amounts of overhead rigging they've done. But we run out of our way, really, I would say more in the artistic and sort of framing sort of world would be when they left the studio to show their world in New York City and then in the suburbs in terms of like Steve Carell's character and where their family lives intersect with their professional lives and those environments. But yeah, I mean, I think every DP tries to be a little painterly at times. I mean, you have enough where you're doing, you know, obviously telling conversations and close-ups, but when you have that opportunity and, you know, stuff like Handmaid's Tale recently does a great job of some exquisite, you know, painterly, looks like it could go on someone's wall sort of a shot every once in a while. I mean, that's what I say every once in a while. Every once in a while, it should just be something that's like, oh, boom, that's art, you know.
Yeah. Michael, did you shoot the program in New York?
I'm sorry?
Did you shoot the program in New York?
I mean, we did all of our stage workers. We're on Sony stages here, so everything that's built and with translights and all the, you know, traditional fake it New York stuff. But exteriors, we did a combination. We did some stuff in L.A. when we could, but then, yeah, we would go and shoot most of the exteriors in New York or the stuff that counted. But we did a decent amount of the old Hollywood tradition of fooling people and creating New York City and downtown L.A., which is not ever easy, but people do it, so yes, we'll do some of that too. But yeah, you know, you can't sell that world. You can't. It's I've always felt like Manhattan's one of the, you got to be there. You got to shoot there to sell it. Some places you can get away with it, but but the majority here, we went to Las Vegas also because there's one episode that takes place in Vegas, and then back and forth to New York.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is interesting now about cinematography for television? I'm getting the sense that there is, because of all the services that you can do a show for, there's much more freedom in terms of style. There's much more freedom in terms of substance. I mentioned what Todd Campbell does on Mr. Robot, what you do on your show. I don't know if you've seen David Makes Man, the new series from, on the Oprah Winfrey Network from Terrell Adam McCready from Moonlight fame, but they do some interesting things with direct photography on that show. Godfather of Harlem, which was shot in Harlem with Forest Whitaker, they do some interesting things that sort of really give you the flavor of Harlem, both the glamorous side, but also the ugly side. You just get the sense that cinematographers now in television have more freedom to try things, whether it's overhead shots, below shots, use mini cams, use a single camera, and use it for like 9-10 minutes at a time, and believing that the audience will get it if you don't cut away to another shot.
Yeah. No, I think you're completely right. I think that, like, you know, I think we're just sort of in a great period for all, because the demand for content is such that there's so much going on, and there is so many wonderful TV shows all over the place that, you know, it feels like you can't even if one attempted, they wouldn't have time to see all the great work that's being created, and I truly feel this way. I think that there's sort of a golden age of TV, and I don't even know if it's TV. It's almost like, you know, it's like our labeling is wrong now. It's almost like, is this a short form or a long, you know what I mean? Like a short form being, oh, it's a 2-hour movie. Oh, this is a 10-hour movie. And that's whatever we used to call television. But I think that there's a complete freedom there. There's more experimentation. I mean, when I first began as a cinematographer, I was doing a lot of sort of what we, you know, indie movies and a Weinstein company or Miramax or Warner Brothers Independent and all these little companies used to buy these small movies, and that's all gone away and sort of dried up. And I think it was replaced by a lot of this dramatic 1-hour TV world that the Amazons and Netflix and Hulu and everybody's done. And like, look at this, just a piles of, I mean, HBO sort of started this, but everyone's followed in suit. And I mean, in a lot of ways, I think you could fairly argue that all the television is the most creative, artistic, significant work that in the United States is going on, and that, you know, frankly, movies are dominated by comic books and remakes, and it's so stinking expensive to make a movie. Nobody wants to risk a new story, but maybe on the smaller scale of spending a few less million dollars, certainly those opportunities are there. I think that, like, I did some of Ozark, and that's an indie movie. I mean, that's like The Leftovers. My gosh, that is an indie movie from the years past. I mean, that's a difficult, not for everybody kind of show that HBO made. And it's probably my favorite thing I've ever done. I'm forever proud of The Leftovers. And then, you know, something like The Morning Show. I mean, like, look at this. It's like we have huge, three giant movie stars and a TV show. And so, like I said, I'm having trouble even calling them TV shows anymore. It's almost like, oh, these streaming serial dramas. You know what I mean? It's like, it almost feels like this, because forever, I mean, you know, we had this demarcation of movies were the movies, and then TV was below. And when I first was, you know, used to do music videos, and I was doing TV shows, and I wanted to do movies. And now it's like, well, I just want to do the best scripted material I can get my hands on. And, well, most of that's been these scripted hour-long shows lately. And really it was The Leftovers that sort of slapped me in the face of like, hey, man, this is better material that's getting my juices flowing more than I was getting in opportunities in some of the features. Now, I think that's just true for everybody, you know, and there's just so much good TV. I don't know how the viewer finds it all. It's difficult to see, because I constantly am discovering some stuff that a few years past that, you know, I'm like, man, this was so good, and you know, I never watched it. But yeah, without question, you could probably, just on a real base level, like, yeah, you can experiment a bit more. There's a little more freedom. And you know, finishing on a smaller screen, to be honest, like your mistakes can be fixed better than they can when you got to make it really huge. I mean, when it goes on the big screen, everything gets magnified. So, you know, if you misexpose or something slightly out of foot, whatever, the technical stuff, like they just show up bigger. So yeah, you can, I think
I'm
you
happy
try
that
a lot
way, Michael, that, Michael, I'm happy you mentioned the Leftovers. I love that show. Your cinematography and everything about it was great. Tom Parada, who was the writer on that show, the great novelist, was on our program the first season of the series, and I'm thrilled that it had a great run on HBO. Damon Lindelof was one of the key forces behind it. Now he has Watchmen, which premiered last night to rave reviews, and a wonderful actress named Regina King, who was in that series. And, of course, has gone on to do
wonderful
great performance. One of the best people in television, period, of any kind. Now is also in Watchmen, and she again delivers another possible Emmy-winning performance.
Yep, without question. I mean, those people, everything you said, I just totally agree. Damon Lindelof is something else, man. I would jump at the chance to work with him again. One of my dearest friends, an operator that I work with a lot, he did the Watchmen, but he was with us on The Leftovers, and he's very excited about it. I am very excited about watching that one. And Regina is truly one of the most gifted, most wonderful human beings you'll ever experience. And just as a person, she's as great of a person as she is an actress, which is an awesome thing to say, because, boy, is she a great actress. Yeah, I mean, The Leftovers is one of the coolest shows ever. I mean, that's just, it'll probably, I don't know that I'll ever top it, because it just meant a lot to me personally, and what it said about the universe.
Totally get that. And by the way, Tom has a brand new series coming out, I think, next week on HBO. It's called His Dark Materials, and I hear it's also a really terrific show, so watch out for it. And Tom, we'd love to have you back on the series, back on our show anytime. You are always welcome. The Morning Show, it is the beginning, along with other series, of Apple TV Plus, and it premieres 1 week from this Friday on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, Apple TV included, The Morning Show. Again, the all-star cast is led by Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, Steve Carell, many, many others. Michael's one of the two cinematographers on the series. And again, it will start when Apple TV Plus starts on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, Apple TV included, next Friday, November 1st. For more details about all the programming on Apple TV Plus online, go to www.apple.com. That's www.apple.com. Michael Grady, thank you so much for being on the program today. Good luck with you and everybody on the series. Hopefully a great – by the way, we'll have a second season. That's already been in the cards. So have a wonderful 2 years and hopefully many, many more years with the series. And you're welcome back anytime. It's been a great pleasure.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It was super great. And, Yeah, we're about to start the second season. They've already started talking about it. So, yes, there will be a second season. I hope people enjoy it. It is a fascinating journey and probably will go in places and take you to narrative places you did not think when the series began. So, yeah, I think it's really great. We're all very proud of it. And, again, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Michael. All the greatest. Take care.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Michael Brady, co-cinematographer on The Morning Show on Apple TV Plus, joining us live from Los Angeles. Now time for our classic trivia question of the week. Brand new question, brand new prize. Monty Python FAQ by Chris Baranski, Brian Cogan, and Jeff Massey. All you want to know about Monty Python's Flying Circus and other Monty Python-oriented things. And you can get that as our prize if you can answer this question. Who was the first Sherlock Holmes on U.S. television? Who was the first actor that played Sherlock Holmes specifically on U.S. television back in 1954? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if you missed the question a moment ago, we'll have it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter, UBC Simon TWBT. Visit UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and all the very best. And finally, our show to know, where we highlight a program that is worth your while. You might not know about it because it's not been well marketed, publicized, et cetera, on the air. A couple of weeks ago on our news notes section, we told you about the return of Catch 21, the popular game show on GSN from way back when, from Merrill Heater of Merrill Heater and Bob Quigley Productions, with Alfonso Romero as the host and Nikki Bedelia as the car dealer. You can still see reruns of Catch 21 on GSN, but last week, those new episodes, now, under the new Catch-21 title, premiered. And you can see the next new episode this Monday night at 6 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on GSN. I had a chance to, by the way, you can also see the first episode on YouTube. In this case, Romero is back. He's really terrific. Great new set, great new design. And he's now joined by Winnie Carson, his partner in his Emmy-winning, his award-winning turn of the Mirror Ball on Dancing with the Stars. And I won't spoil what they do at the beginning of the show. I think it's kind of cute and a lot of fun. The all-new Catch-21. Tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on GSN. For more details, www.gsntv.com. It's www.gsntv.com. And if you have an idea for a show to know, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook or follow me on Twitter. If we use suggestion on the air, you get the credit. Don't forget, coming up on Friday's program, Tracy Face Johnson from Blues Clues and Blues Clues and You on Nickelodeon. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not those of the Blog Talk Radio speaker and iHeartRadio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Show is Blog Talk Radio General Manager, with Jay Sonberg, Executive Content Producer. The co-founders of this enterprise, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow's Talk is brought to you by Audible.com, an Amazon company. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a trio of great audiobooks and a one-month trial, it's audibletrial.com/televised. But tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Thanks to both of our guests for a great hour, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. If you did, tell a friend, and keep listening. More great things in store. We hope you have a wonderful week ahead. Be back with us on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and the IR Radio podcast. And by the way, next week, we will have three episodes for you, Monday, Thursday, and Friday. This Monday, Thursday, Friday, including November 1st, when Apple TV Plus premieres. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.